Welcome to Let's Talk Golf. I'm your host, Penny Gaylor. Hello everybody, I'm Penny Gaylor, your host, and today's special guest is Kevin Smith. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Penny. Thanks for the invite.
Oh, and you know, first up, maybe we'd explain, so what's your role in terms of golf? You do some coaching, don't you?
That's right. Yeah, I'm a full-time coaching professional as opposed to a playing professional, like a Michael Campbell or a Tiger Woods. So for the last 40-plus years, that's what I've been doing, basically full-time coaching, and now been based in the Kapiti Coast for probably about 20 years.
And so you go through, like you're associated to the Ōtaki Club. Are you associated with other ones?
Yeah, at present I'm coaching at Ōtaki, and as well as the Papara Beach Golf Club.
Right. So you do like one-on-one coaching. And you see, I know you because you've helped me, and you know I needed a lot of help. We're getting there. It's a project. But you also, so you do one-on-ones. You do, what other kind of approaches are there to coaching?
Correct. Most of my coaching is by appointment, one-on-one, or people, friends, or couples, or families. In the past, I've done beginner programs. We just recently had one, very successful one, at Ōtaki Golf Club, taking them through it, which is a lot of fun. So we take them through putting and chipping and pitching and swing, and we finish off with out on the course, which is the most fun, of course. I've also done one-day schools, three-day schools. I used to do a coaching school, summer school in Methven for about 25 years until life got a bit busy.
Yeah.
I enjoy the fact of coaching first-time golfers, mm-hmm. Junior golfers as young as 5 and 6, as well as right up to the golf professionals.
Mm. And so what we're finding, you know, the idea of this show is because there's so many different bits and bobs of golf, isn't there? Technical stuff. But then, you know, it's such a lovely sociable game and you can play with anybody of any level. You can all just go out and have a hit. And I, you know, we've had some lessons and then you kind of get to the point, I don't wonder, a lot of people like this, you kind of go, well, I know some of this technical stuff and now I'm a bit nervous to actually go out on the course.
Yeah, I think you just got to do it softly. Golf can be simple, mm-hmm. but we can make it complex for ourselves. And it's if you want to play a sport and do it consistently, take up something else. Golf is like life. It has its highs and lows, and we never know when that's going to happen. So basically, you just got to be patient with yourself. Go about it in a very, let's say, step-by-step process, become comfortable in the practice facilities and training, but then it's all about playing. So get on the golf course. The great thing, as you say, with golf is you can be a beginner and have as much fun as a golf professional or a top amateur. In fact, sometimes it's more fun when you're getting started because you have a good laugh and don't take the game too seriously.
Oh, yes, there's been quite a lot of comedic moments.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing is it's, you know, whatever level you play at, it's still just a game and it's a great game. It's a great leveler too. And it's also a game where, like if you're playing tennis, if somebody's a stronger tennis player, you're going to do lots of running around. Whereas golf, you know, you can be new to golf or be an 18 handicapper or be a scratch golfer and actually have a really good game where the 18 handicapper could clean up, and beat everybody else.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And what I found also, you know, we'd done some lessons and then went out on the course just to kind of, you know, club choice was really helpful, but also etiquette.
Yep.
There's a lot of do's and don'ts and, you know, but kind of good sensible things, but also just, you know, for the rest of those people who are also playing out there.
Yeah, so there's
a lot to it.
And I think it's two things. It's one, yeah, being aware of other people and making sure that you're safe and that they're safe, but also looking after the golf course. you know, and the club member can remember to repair their divots and fix their pitch marks, which I'm very big on.
Mm.
So, yeah, there are rules of etiquette, but as you say, the common sense, really, and just courtesies.
Yes, and when I recently asked one of the green keepers about, oh, how do you, you know, like, I'm having trouble getting out those bunkers. How can you make them fluffier? And he said, well, if everybody would rake the bunker after they've been in there.
True.
Simple thing.
True.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so does every club have the likes of yourself, a coach associated with them?
No, a big proportion of golf clubs throughout New Zealand don't have a resident golf professional. And you can have several different types of golf professionals at the club. I'm the coaching professional at Ōtaki and also at Papalumu. But we've got you've got a golf operations golf professional at Papalumu, and you'll have trainees.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they are in charge of how the pro shop runs. So selling equipment and providing gear, shoes, gloves, golf balls and all those sorts of things. Plus also the management of who's out there on the course, golf tournaments. So they're really in charge of those golf operations, as the title suggests. But they can also, they repair golf clubs and sell golf clubs. And so it's quite a, and I was a club professional for a couple of years, but that was really to put money in my pocket and to go off to America and spend some time with their top coaches, because coaching is what I was all about.
Right, so let's dive into that. So you were, when did you do that and how long were you doing that for?
Long, long time ago, Penny.
Yep, that's okay.
Centuries ago. Basically, yeah, I was still at school. I didn't start playing golf till I was about 14. Rugby was my main sport, but then I joined a golf club. My father, who took up golf at 50, thought the game was stupid until then.
Yeah.
And then every Sunday morning he'd be out playing golf, and he told me about some other juniors at the club that were playing, so, and asked me if I'd be interested, and I went out there. And those same juniors are my best friends now.
Really?
So we've been through everything. But basically, how I became a golf professional was quite strange. After only 2 years of playing, my father, driving back from the golf course that we played at, Whiteman's Valley, said, would you ever think about playing it professionally? Now, you know, I'm not sure where that question came from, but my answer was probably just as strange.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I wouldn't want to play it, but I wouldn't mind coaching it. Now, I'm not sure where that came from.
Yeah.
But then 2 years later on, I was still at school, and through my rugby, ironically, one of the boys I played with, his brother was the assistant or the trainee at Heretonga, Royal Wellington now, and he was finishing his time, and so they approached me whether I'd be interested. Otherwise, I was either going to be in sport of some kind or an architect.
Oh, right.
So quite different, and golf got presented, and I had a trial, and obviously didn't annoy the boss enough, so he gave me, asked me if I wanted to continue, and basically you do a 3-year apprenticeship, so it's a proper apprenticeship. You had to pass a rules test, which I managed to do quite successfully, and a player's test, so you had to play to a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite different now. Back then it was 36 holes, and you had to be under a certain score over those 36 holes, and I got lucky one day and managed to do that. And then you do exams and testing, general knowledge, repair, coaching, and, yeah, just general sort of looking after a business and in a shop. So from there, it all went. I really enjoyed it.
And so these days, you know, when you've we've been out there doing some hits, and you've got your iPad and you're taking photos, well, taking a video, and then you're showing me the angles, a bit like an architect.
Yep.
And you know, so it's actually really technical. You know, I just think, oh, you're swing, and then when you're showing the video, and you know, you're bringing out all the different angles and stuff. You know, you didn't have that to show people when you probably first started out.
No, you didn't. It was all, you know, is all feel and instruction, and it must have been harder learning that way. But you know, the ball tells you whether things are going right or things are going wrong, so that's a good indicator. And then, you know, years later, what I used to do is take my camera out and take photos. And then you'd have to wait, like we used to back in the dark
ages, to the next lesson.
For a week later and go and get these photos, and I'd draw lines on them. I had certain angles that I believed in that, that I would show, and it worked back then. And then we, as soon as video came in, I had those, one of those big cameras, know.
Like a big TV camera.
Exactly. Yeah. And now it's a lot easier. You can do it on your phone or, as you say, on the iPad. And there's some very good systems. So the good thing now is I've got, I've had about a half dozen plus students who have been on scholarships or are on scholarships in America, and clients around, well, Dan have been away and Julianne, who was playing professionally, and clients around New Zealand, where they can send me some videos and I can put a program together with a split screen and do the angles and then a bit of instruction. So it's a lot easier to keep in touch with people nowadays.
I mean, I have to say, when you've sort of said something and you're like, oh, wasn't that what I was doing?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I think you're wrong there, Kevin. I was doing that. And then you show the video and you go, oh.
It's what I call my lie detector.
Yeah,
feelings lie.
Feels
like all the same. Yeah, we are.
Yes, and then when you can see it, and then you're putting the lines that you do as you click, click onto the screen, and you're going, I get it. It's really helpful.
Yeah, it is. And definitely, like even for myself, if I was to get back to playing, you know, I'd go and hit some balls, find out what's going on with the ball, but as soon as possible, I'd stick myself on video and then treat myself like, unemotionally. So you got to detach yourself and go, right, what is this person doing?
Training the trainer.
Training the trainer.
So you talked about Daniel there. So you want to like share for listeners about Daniel Hillier's, like when you first started coaching him, and he's, you know, doing really well. He's been a pro for, what, five, nearly 6 years now?
Not quite as long as that. I think this might be his fourth year.
Okay.
But, yeah, but pretty close to it.
Yeah.
I used to be the Wellington coach, and we had, in that, we developed some development groups and squads, and he came along to one of those. I think he was probably around about 12 that stage, playing cricket. His dad was his cricket coach. And then Daniel, you know, really good attitude from day one, and very disciplined young boy and a great listener, so very coachable. And then probably by the time he was 14, he decided, right, golf was my thing, to his father's disappointment, because he no longer had a cricketer. He had a golfer, but Nigel's a great guy, and Nigel loves his golf as well. So things got a little bit more regular at that stage, and Daniel just, like, his progress skyrocketed. So by the time he was 16, he was the New Zealand amateur champion. So he's still the youngest to have ever won the New Zealand amateur at 16. He beat, I think, Danny Lee by about a week.
Wow.
So once he won, I was like, is he the youngest?
Oh,
so we were checking it. And and there's a young fella called Cooper Moore, who's also 16. Who won the amateur this year, and he's just a little bit older, so Dan still holds that. And then Dan won it again at 18, so he's the only person to have won it twice as a teenager. In fact, I think when he set the record for being the youngest, I think the history of the New Zealand amateur was about 123 years or something, so it's quite outstanding.
So does he get to come back to New Zealand for tournaments very much now, or is he just international?
He plays, he's pretty busy. When he comes back home, nowadays it's to rest and catch up with his family. Very tight family, fantastic family. But he plays the New Zealand Open and has done the last few years. He's been fortunate to have Steve Williams, Tiger's old caddy, on the bag.
Oh.
And Steve's looked after him extremely well. And thinks highly of Dan. And we used to catch up quite regularly. We chatted probably the last time might only be about 4 weeks ago. He's a busy man. And the good thing is that a lot of the groundwork's been done. So he looks after himself pretty much. And then every so often I might sneak in a couple of things that I might happen to see when he's been on TV. But otherwise, no, he looks after himself really well.
Yeah, so when you're watching him on at a tournament, you know, you're watching on TV from New Zealand and you're kind of looking for going, oh, what's this grip, the grip, where's the... You lost it there, or your knee, you lifted your foot.
You can't help being a coach.
Yeah.
So, you're always looking at things like that. But also when he won the British Masters a couple of years ago, I could see that he was starting to do what we'd been working on. He'd been working on certain more sequencing for 3 years, and things got together and he finished amazingly well to win that tournament, which was huge. So there's always things to work on, and he has his habits, as we all do. We are creatures of habit, so often the good thing about coaching players when they're younger is you see what their patterns are, and the patterns of movements are almost like fingerprints. It doesn't matter how good you are or how long you've been playing. Often those things that we did when we were younger, we still do as we get a bit older. So he knows what his patterns are, so he knows where to look at. And, I know what I'm looking at as well. Mm. So the coaching side becomes very simple.
And so, and just, you know, as you're talking about that, thinking about, you know, when you're coaching a young teenager, who was barely a teenager when you first, and then going through the teenage years, and then as they're kind of growing physically, and what is the kind of stage at which they've kind of reached that physical kind of power balance that, you know, you'd kind of be going, oh, you know, come 24, or is it come 21, and that's, you know, they're kind of the peak of that, and then that's the bulk that they'll have or the strength that they'll have?
Probably when Dan started playing his best is when he started getting stronger.
Yeah.
You know, and that was his teenage years, that 15, 16, 17, 18. But, of course, they're too young to do gym stuff. But I've always worked closely with physios and personal trainers because we can only do what our body allows us to do. And youngsters are always, you know, flexible in all this, which isn't true. So even as youngsters, we might have our certain limitations. So we've always got stuff to work on. But now golf is real. They are athletes, both the guys and the girls. Going to the gym is definitely a regular thing. Your diet, you know, your sleep, everything. So by the time you're 20, 21, you're starting to reach that physical strength and capabilities, but everybody's different. You know, I'm 5 foot nothing, so there was no growing spurt for me.
So I'm interested to hear about, you know, nowadays you see more of the professionals, they're talking about their gym workouts and all that sort of thing. So what are they doing there? Because you can't imagine they're trying to bulk up, are they?
Some are. Because they want to generate as much speed as they can, but you need stability. And for stability, you need some muscle mass. Because, you know, I might be able to create some speed, but I might not be strong enough to create stability in my golf swing. And so it becomes less efficient. So there's a lot of exercise, gym work, weights, speed work, power, fast twitch muscle fiber, you know, so creating some exercise to create speed with mass so you can swing that club a lot faster and, as I say, maintain stability. But also yoga, Pilates, meditation, all these things make up the athlete, whatever sport activity that you're looking at, you're always looking at how can I get 1% better? Frank Nobilo used to say, if you're not going forward, you're going backwards. And so everybody's having a look at that. And you know, what Tiger would do in the gym. In fact, I can remember Michael Campbell saying, you know, he knew he was doing it right because he was at the gym first thing before he played, and there was Tiger Woods in the gym doing his exercise. And you have physios and personal trainers travelling with a lot of these athletes just to make sure not only that they are getting stronger and, you know, got mobility and stability, but injury prevention.
Mm,
you know,
right.
Golf can, biomechanically, you've got to do things right. Otherwise, it can create some stress on your lower back, your neck, your elbows. So you've got to make sure that the swing is efficient, it's powerful, it's consistent, but it's also not doing any damage. And there's been a lot of very good players who, because of what they've done biomechanically, has created a lot of stress, especially in the lower back, that at an early age they're carrying serious injuries and having operations. So, you know, there's a lot more to this game than, you know. But at the same time, you can be a John Daly and have your McDonald's and drink your Coke and smoke your cigarettes and still function.
Yes.
But he was a talented athlete, but maybe he didn't do as well as he could have because he wasn't looking after his body. But the game has got a, you know, there's lots of different legs to it.
Yes, well, I think I do more of a warm-up than he does.
Yeah, he's out there with the, you know, I used to hear that at tournaments people will be watching, obviously, Tiger Woods, and when Tiger was here, I definitely set myself up so I could watch him train and practice. But when John Daly would arrive on the range, people would leave Tiger and go and watch him because, you know, he wouldn't be warming up with chipping and pitching and then going through the shorter clubs, the longer clubs, and leaving the driver for last. It was driver first up, hit four or six balls, and, yep, I'm ready now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
all right.
Different creature. Different creature.
I can say, oh, I'm training like Daly.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
So what is that? Is that that he's just so naturally gifted with power and technique?
Yeah, he, you know, when I watched him and he won the US Open and won the Open, the British Open, he was known for his power, you know, very long swing but extremely timed up, strong man, but he has what you'd call soft hands. So he had fantastic touch around the greens, and so he wasn't just power. He also had a great short game. And so he just has this natural talent, this natural ability, and mentally he understood what he was doing, you know, when he was a teenager and looking at scholarships, you know. There was talk about a coach going, well, you know, if you come here, I can fix this and I can fix that. And he said, well, if you're going to change my swing, I'm not coming here. And so he went and just did his own thing.
Yeah, I think he's very much his own man.
He's definitely very much his own man. He's like a Bobby Watson, you know. And the game needs those players.
Yes, yes.
You know, we need those personalities in the game.
So when all, you know, because I love watching it now. And, you know, watching how what the players are doing, and then you're hearing the commentators talking about what the golf club choice and the lengths, and just a lot of really interesting information. And then, you know, if you're picking up, I had never appreciated how much caddies work with their player.
Absolutely. You've got to have a really good relationship and a relationship of trust, but also knowledge. So the caddy will be there when the player is working with their personal coach. The caddy will know what the player's working on, what drills to use, but also they know when to say what they need to say to the player to get the best out of them. And Steve Williams was obviously one of the best, if not the best in the world, where he knew to tell some untruths sometimes, you know, because he knew that Tiger's adrenaline would be built up, so he'd start hitting it further towards the end. So, you know, Steve would manage the distance that he'd tell him to make sure that Tiger had the right club. It wouldn't be the right distance.
Oh, okay.
But he'd make sure that Tiger knew, okay, it's not a 7-iron, it's an 8-iron. And, you know, to inject the right message at the right time. And Steve's known for reading putts. And you know, when he caddied for Adam Scott, and Adam Scott won the Masters, you know, Adam Scott said, you know, is this the line? And this was the 18th, and they had a putt of probably about 15, 18 feet. And Steve was smart enough because he knew that putt.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, you've got to aim a lot higher than that. And Adam was smart enough to listen to Steve and sung the putt and, you know, was the Masters champion. So, yeah, it's a huge job, huge job.
Yeah. And I've always wondered why don't they have trundlers when they go around with them.
If I'm caddying for them, we sometimes use trolleys.
Okay.
But these guys are athletes, and I used to caddy for some of my players who play professionally as well. And I'd carry the big bag, and you know, you're a bit stronger, a bit fitter back then. You've got more access to the golf course and wherever you can walk.
Yeah,
with carrying the bag, so it does make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'd love to know if you could have a round of golf with any pro player in the world, anybody, who would it be and where would you like to play?
If I was to say one particular pro, it would be Ben Hogan.
Oh, okay.
Ben Hogan from the 40s and the 50s. Mm-hmm. He's renowned. I mean, not only was he a fantastic player, and had an amazing comeback after a serious car accident where he was lucky to survive it. But also he's known for, let's say, inventing the modern golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the mechanics and biomechanics that he worked out just by hitting balls and practicing, which was an unknown back then, we still use today. And he'd be just an amazing guy to listen to and watch him play. Mm. And of course, Tiger Woods would be fantastic, and Jack and Arnold Palmer, but probably Lee Trevino would be another one,
mm-hmm.
with his sense of humour and his sense of fun, and he's good at talking, and I like listening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, any of those players would be phenomenal.
And which course?
Oh, St Andrews.
Oh,
the home of golf.
Yeah.
So it'd be wonderful to get there.
Is it always windy there?
I'm sure it's probably more windy days than still days. but, yeah, it's all part of it. It's part of playing links golf. It gets windy at Paparumu too.
Yeah.
And that just changes the golf course, you know. And when it's benign, it's gettable, Paparumu. There's been some fantastic scores around there. But when you've got a southerly or the prevailing's a northerly, it changes how you play each of the holes and the length of the hole, so it becomes a different test.
Mm.
So I used to enjoy playing the wind because, you know, you had to play smarter and I could create stuff. So, you know, you use your imagination and golf becomes art, which is fun.
Mm. And it should be fun. But yes, the challenge of it is brilliant. Hey, well, thank you so much for sharing all that with us. It's been a pleasure to have the chat. And Kevin, thank you so much for coming on. Wish you well.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks, Benny.
Thank you. Thanks very much, everybody.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.